Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. Good morning, Francis.
Hi there, Marky.
Things are good today.
Things are good indeed. Everybody should realize when they go to restaurantguysradio.com, you can figure out how to subscribe to us.
You can go to iTunes, you can go to Podcast Alley, any of those places. You can download information, and it'll go right to your computer every day whenever we prepare a show.
Wow, you figured out how it works. That's super. I'm doing all this work, putting stuff up on the web, and you know how it works now.
Stop making fun of me, dude.
Oh, no. The show would lose all its character if I stopped making fun of you. Today we're going to be talking about some happy things and some sad things and some scary things.
Mostly scary.
Well, we're going to do the happy things later. We have joining us as a guest Bartholomew Broadbent, who is the son of Michael Broadbent, Master of Wine. It's hard to have a big, famous father. His father was one of the most important sommeliers in the world for many, many years and still is one of the most important sommeliers in the world. Bartholomew is his son. He's America's foremost authority on Port and Madeira, which are two kinds of wine, both from Portugal, both very important. He's the owner of Broadbent Selections, which represents the Port of Madeira, but also other kinds of wine. And he was named by Decanter Magazine one of the 50 most influential wine people in the wine world.
We're not there yet.
We are not there yet.
I think we're like 51 and 52?
Yeah.
Something like that?
We're rising. We need everybody out there in Podcast Alley Land to vote for us. But today we're going to talk about some scary stuff. My first is, there's a new product out. I don't know if you saw it on the Today Show. It's called Flavor Spray. That's right.
Flavor spray.
Flavor spray.
Is it like Pam?
It was developed. It's like Pam, but worse. It was developed by David Burke, who is a celebrity chef, guy we've met, nice guy, and I'm sorry, but he's crossed over to the dark side.
Yeah.
He's just he's
the Darth Vader of the food world now.
He was Luke Skywalker. He's still a nice guy, David. I still love you. And I've had some great meals that he's cooked over the years.
Anakin Skywalker, we'll call him.
He's experimenting with food on the cutting edge, and there are a lot of people like Ferran Adria is the leader of the pack of these people who are experimenting with kind of new ways to put food together. But David Burke has really gone over to the dark side in that he's working with chemical companies and he's working with, you know, big high-tech companies to come up with new foods, to sort of reinvent food. And, you know, while chefs are always looking to go forward and we're always looking to put food together in new ways, and we even look for technology to help us grow foods. Mark and I are firmly of the view that people should be looking for more traditional foods, that traditional foods are their best. Mm-hmm. We're finding out that local farms make the best food, are best for the land, are best for the earth.
But at the same time, we're not afraid of technology.
No.
We're not afraid of these new things coming along. But almost always, Francis and I are proponents of that our food really needs to be made out of food.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
I can't say that's a hard and fast rule, but I'll say almost always our food should be made of food.
Here's the deal. You out there have increasingly good taste. We know what a great tomato tastes like, and it's really important that we go to our merchants and we demand that in season we have great tomatoes.
So you don't want tomato spray?
Well, here's what this stuff is. It's David Burke, award-winning chef, author, inventor, restaurateur, entrepreneur, and evil overlord, launches Flavor Spray. Flavor Spray encompasses a collection of intense flavors that can be mixed with an array of everyday foods, including poultry, seafood, salad, vegetables, dairy. It dices, it slices. Oh, those last two are mine. The concentrated, easy-to-use liquid sprays eliminate unwanted calories, carbohydrates, cholesterol, and fats associated
flavor,
with...
Interest?
No, they have flavor.
Yeah.
But associated with toppings, gravies, dressings, sauces, while still packing the distinct punch of flavor. They're categorized into three taste-tempting groups, classic, exotic, and sweet. Okay, listen. Eat real food, everybody, and make it well, and it will taste good. Go into your store and require... that they have good tasting food, and here's
not just good tasting food,
but
real food.
Why do we need flavor spray? Okay, if you eat the best diet that you can eat is wholesome whole foods. I recently lost about 25 pounds, And the way that I did it, I was overweight. I was too much. I own a restaurant. Come on. They make hundreds of pounds of ice cream that I own every week, and I can just dip in whenever I want. I'm the owner.
And
I don't have to pay. What I did was I said, okay, I'll make a deal with myself. Every time I want a candy bar, every time I want a ho-ho, I will...
That's an easy one.
Leave that alone.
I never really want a ho-ho.
All right. But every time I want a candy or something like that, I would say, you know what, I'm going to have an apple before I have the candy, and if I still want the candy when I'm done, I'll eat it. You know what? 9 out of 10 times, I don't want the candy when I'm done. But even if I do, I had an apple. The idea is to eat whole food. This also keeps farmers in traditional farms, which make good food in ways that are good for the land and good for your community. It also keeps farmers in your community, because if you want really good food, you need to buy locally from your local food shed.
What farm grows the can of spray food?
No farm at all. That comes out of a laboratory. It doesn't even have the name of it here. Flavors Spray.
Flavors Spray is trademarked.
It is a trademark.
Yeah, it's trademark Flavor Spray.
But here's the deal: if what Flavor Spray does, if you look at, okay, let's look at the fast food that you eat. The reason that those burgers taste like they do is not they're always the same. Any McDonald's anywhere in the country, any Burger King anywhere in the country.
Mm-hmm. I think people may not realize what you're about to say.
They taste the same. The reason is because what they try to make or what they insist upon from their purveyors is flavorless meat. Mm-hmm. If the meat has flavor, they don't want it, because when you deal with real food, sometimes it tastes a little different than other times. That's real food. What they've insisted upon on these fast food companies is that it be neutral. And then the flavors are all manufactured in big factories on the New Jersey Turnpike. That's right, the New Jersey Turnpike, that really disgusting stretch of it, right around exit 13, Elizabeth, Linden. That's where the flavor comes from. It's all manufactured.
Well, there are actually fast food places that pump odors, fake odors that are supposed to smell like food, into the air.
So that you'll associate it with. Do you know what we do at Stage Left? We grill a hamburger, and it smells good.
What's it smell like?
It smells like beef.
What's that again?
You know, and here's my problem with that. Even with the processors, the vegetable processors out in the Midwest, what they want, okay, is the Heinz company. What they look for is a flavorless tomato so that it can always be consistent and never change. And they add the flavors in. And that's not what real food is all about. And I'm sorry,
Francis,
David Burke.
That doesn't hold a candle to labs growing meat.
Oh, yeah.
Just doesn't hold a candle to that. There's an article in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago.
We're out to scare you here today.
What they are doing is called cultured meat. Because animal cells can be endlessly multiplied in a lab dish. So what they're doing, for all intents and purposes, the same thing they're doing with stem cells, is they're taking these cells, multiplying them in a petri dish, and trying to sell them to you, and they're not doing this yet, but that's the effort, is to get these to the market so they can sell them to you as food.
Here's what they want to do. They want to basically grow muscles in a laboratory. How gross is that?
It couldn't be more gross.
And I'm sorry, that's completely unnatural. The University of Maryland doctoral student Jason Matheny and his colleagues identified two techniques for creating products that taste like beef, chicken, pork, and fish with the nutrients and texture of meat. It involves growing animal muscle and fat cells on thin membranes stretched over large fat sheets.
Oh. Ew.
And then removing the meat-like material.
If you're not sitting in your car right now going, ew.
Listen,
then there's something wrong with you.
Then removing the meat-like material and stacking it together to create a thicker cut of meat. Oh, my God. The challenge is getting the texture right. We have to figure out how to... No. You got to listen to this. We have to figure out how to exercise the muscle cells for the right texture.
I know how you can do it.
Put it in an animal.
Make it an animal and make it walk. How's that?
Or let it walk. Are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? It's okay, David Burke, this is where you're going. This is where you're taking us. And then you can spray it with David Burke's flavoring, and you'll have a perfect cheeseburger.
We are pathetic.
It's just awful. Go and have a tomato. I'm going to go have a tomato. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Francis Schott and Mark Pascal from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we are here with a very special guest today. We have with us Bartholomew Broadbent. He's America's foremost authority on port and Madeira. He's the owner of Broadbent Selections, and he was named by Decanter Magazine one of the 50 most influential people in the wine world, and he joins us today. Hello, Bartholomew.
Thanks. Just to show you can't believe everything you read.
Francis and I were commenting earlier in the show that we must have come in at 51 and 52.
Yeah, we just missed the list. We're just a couple more up there, and we want to get on. No, for our listeners out there, they may not realize that in 2002, port is a kind of wine, and we're talking specifically about port today, though Bartholomew has a company that imports a number of different kinds of wine. In 2002, the United States overtook Britain as the number one importer of port wines, and so it is seeing an increased popularity, but not everybody in our listening audience may know what port is or a lot about it. Would you mind taking a moment and just filling people in as to what port is all about?
Yeah, and actually, just to correct that statistic, it's actually not so much port wine, but vintage port.
Right.
America now is by far the biggest consumer of vintage port. And there are several reasons for this. Port basically is a dessert wine. It's a red, usually a red wine, and it's slightly sweet, and it's 20% alcohol, and it's considered a dessert wine or after dinner drink. In France, however, it's drunk before dinner. You know, the French do everything wrong. But anyway, in America, it's become so important because the cuisine of America suits port extremely well. For instance, take chocolate cakes and chocolate dessert. In England, we eat those at about 4:30 in the afternoon with a dainty cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
In America, you have them after the meal. Never with anything dainty.
We don't do dainty very well in the U.S.
Exactly. But anyway, port is one of a few wines which goes really well with chocolate, and especially a young vintage port goes really well with chocolate dessert. In England, they have this rather stuffy attitude about port that it should only be drunk when it's at least 50.
Don't take this the wrong way, Bartholomew, but isn't everything in England just a little bit stuffy? You cracked at the French, I had to get you back. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The other thing, in America, we always drink our wines young, like we're probably all drinking Cabernets and big mm-hmm. Zinfandels and, mm-hmm. and Merlots from, you know, 2 or 3, 4 years old. So we're used to big, heavy-style wines. So going on to a port is the natural progression, going on from a big, rich table wine to a big, rich port.
Let me bring this down for some of you guys in the audience who may not be wine drinkers. What Mike's right. talking about is that...
Why are they listening, then?
Exactly. what Bartholomew's talking about is... European wines generally are of a lower alcohol content than American wines, and that's for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is we have a lot more sunshine over here, and so that makes the plants have a lot more sugar, and the sugar is the source of the alcohol. And there's also a stylistic difference. American wines tend to always have more power, a little more alcohol. We make the wines generally in a somewhat fruitier style.
Mm-hmm.
And port is the one European wine that's very fruity and has a lot of alcohol. When Bartholomew says it's 20% alcohol, your average German white might be 9% alcohol.
Right.
Your average French Burgundy might be 12.5% alcohol. And your average California wine might be like 15% alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And so to make the jump to port, which is 20% alcohol, not really all that far a jump.
And you must remember that also every progression of alcohol isn't just, you know, going from 12 to 13 to 14% alcohol, going from 12 to 14 isn't really just a 2% increase. It's more of a logarithmic thing.
Yes.
Or like the Richter scale, one point higher on Richter scale.
It's right. exponential as opposed to...
Right, because if you go from something that's 10% alcohol and it moves to 12% alcohol, that's not 2 percentage points. That's 20% more alcohol in that
right.
stuff.
Yeah, so when if you're pregnant in America, most doctors advise not to drink too much wine. In Europe, of course, they tell you to continue your life as normal. But, whereas you might be told that drinking 2 glasses of wine every day, 2 to 4 glasses every day in Europe is fine, here it might be 2 instead of 4 glasses because... Mm. The higher alcohol.
Sure, what Francis said before, German Riesling, you know, can be 9%
yeah.
alcohol, and a American Zinfandel could be 16.
Makes the German wine perfect for lunch.
Yes, I am with you.
I agree. I do have a I have to say, Bartholomew, Mark and I have sort of a European sensibility about ourselves. We really like to enjoy our wine any time of day, more or less.
Great.
But You know, it's not just for breakfast anymore. But no. have you seen overall who is drinking these wines? Is it young people, old people? Are different people drinking them, or are the same people just drinking more?
Well, when I arrived in the States, started promoting port in the States 20 years ago, it was basically old men in old leather armchairs in their stuffy old clubs. But
unfortunately, they've passed away. So when we come back from the break, we're going to find out who's drinking port now. Our guest is Bartholomew Broadbent, America's foremost authority on port and Madeira, and he's talking with us on the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Back here listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we're talking with Bartholomew Broadbent, America's foremost authority on port and Madeira, and we were just talking about who's drinking port these days. Bartholomew, you were just about to tell us who's drinking these wines now.
Yeah, so as I said, 20 years ago, it was stuffy old men in their old leather armchairs, and over the years, I saw the progress as port became more popular until about 10 years ago. So after about 10 years, maybe 7 years of promoting wine, one of my highlights of favorite ever wine tastings I ever did was in San Francisco to a group called the Spinsters of San Francisco. And it's a group of women from the age of 21 to 32, and none of them could be married, so to belong to this club.
Part of the deal, I guess, to be a spinster.
Exactly. And about 300 of them showed up to this port tasting.
Lucky, lucky man, Bartholomew.
Drooling.
And Bartholomew port. Shows up with the port. Great.
I can't tell you. You know, next week, literally, port had become a young woman's drink. So it went from just old men down to then next. It went to the 50-year-olds and the 40-year-olds and then the 30-year-olds. Now, port is an established drink in the United States, accepted by all genders, all races, all types, all colors, all ages, everything. Mm-hmm.
Bartholomew, I find that port for me has gone from drinking it as a 20-year-old to a 30-year-old to a 40-year-old. So I think I'm going the wrong way.
You're not talking about the age of the port. You're talking about the age of yourself.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, I was going to say, like the 20-year-old's best, but that would be another subject on a different type of show.
It's not this show, sir.
And do you find that port is still being drunk after dinner, or do you think port is port being drunk more with more utility in different times of the day?
Definitely still being drunk after dinner or with coffee. You know, if you're sitting at a restaurant lingering, definitely that it is still being drunk then. But the biggest practical use is as a dessert wine. Mm-hmm. Not so much, you know, breakfast. Or anything like that. But
yeah, I personally never like to mix port and coffee at the same time. That's for me.
Any time spent not drinking port is time wasted.
I have you're a partisan in that one there, Bartholomew. I have to say, I have a breakfast port story to share with you all in listener land a little bit later. And port has always been associated with cigars. And I want to ask you, Bartholomew, after the break, to talk to us about the relationship between port and cigars, and if the increasing smoking bans throughout the country is hurting port sales in any way. Our guest is Bartholomew Broadbent. He's America's foremost authority on port and Madeira, and he's talking with us on the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com.
And you can also go to restaurantguysradio.com and find out how to pod to subscribe to our podcast, which will mean our show will be delivered to your computer whenever we put a new one up. Isn't that swell? Our guest today is Bartholomew Broadbent. He's America's foremost authority on port and Madeira. He's the owner of Broadbent Selections, and he's been named by Decanter Magazine as one of the 50 most influential wine people in the world. Well, hi there, Bartholomew.
Hey, how are you?
As we mentioned earlier in the break, Mark and I believe that we are 51 and 52, but the list for now is only 50, so we didn't make it. We were talking before the break about the affinity and the historical ties between port and cigars. People would often, after dinner, go and have a glass of port and then a cigar. And usually, and historically, that was always gentlemen. And now it's harder and harder to find a place to be able to smoke a cigar in a restaurant, especially in, say, New York.
It's also harder to find a gentleman.
Yeah, exactly. So has that hurt port sales at all, or has that changed at all? Are people still doing the port and cigar thing?
No, you know, in about the sometime in the late 80s, I guess, when the cigar fad took off, it boosted port sales. But really, the cigar fad has pretty much faded away. But port sales maintained their popularity. People sort of discovered port by going through the cigar phase. However, I tell you, talking about cigars, by far the best drink to drink whilst you're smoking a cigar is Madeira, not port. Madeira is actually just a fantastic drink.
We are huge fans of Madeira. We always carry a couple of old Madeira at stage left.
Are we going to tell people what Madeira is? Or
sure.
Why don't we just leave that for another show? Why don't you tell people what Madeira is about?
Well, Madeira is actually the most historic drink to America because, first of all, it was invented through shipping to Madeira, whereas port was invented through shipping to England, where they shipped wine to England, and the sea journey tended to break the wine up. So basically what they had to do was to fortify the wine for the trip.
Fortifying means that's when they started to put the alcohol in.
Yes, they had added brandy to the wine to strengthen it to survive the sea journey. Well, with Madeira is an island, Portuguese island, located off the coast of Morocco, but it's directly in the trade winds between Europe and America. So all the boats used to stop off in Madeira to pick up wine, provisions, etc., and they used to use the Madeira as ballast in the bottom of the boats. One day, one of these boats arrived in Savannah or wherever it was going, and they forgot to unload the cargo of Madeira. So it returned to the island where they tasted the wine and found it was much, much better than before it left. And they figured that having crossed the oceans twice had heated the wine. And that's basically how they make wine now, Madeira, is by simulating that voyage to America by heating the wine to 115 degrees Fahrenheit for 3 months.
And is Madeira realizing a resurgence in popularity in America as well?
It is. I mean, it used to be the biggest selling wine in America. For instance,
like the 1800s, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, George Washington
when it wasn't being taxed by the British is when we started drinking it.
Exactly. George Washington, in fact, drank a pint of Madeira every day for dinner.
That's why his wooden teeth were stained.
Yeah, probably soaked in all night and had the flavor all night. Anyway, so he drank a pint of Madeira. Thomas Jefferson's a great Madeira nut. The Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were both toasted by Madeira by the founding fathers.
Also, I just want to tell everybody, one of the great things about Madeira is that it really isn't perishable, as it's already been heated
and oxidized,
that you can open a bottle of Madeira and go back to it much later, where everything, even port, has a shelf life of just a couple of weeks. You can go back to Madeira much later, have it, and for very few ill effects.
What Mark's talking about with the shelf life of a couple of weeks is if you open most wines, you need to drink them within a short period of time because they oxidize and turn on you. But since Madeira is already oxidized, I always recommend it to have people around because you can buy an old, even an expensive old Madeira, pour your friend's glass, put it in the cabinet, and 2 years later come back and pour another glass. You know, and that's very wonderful way to use port because most people, I find the problem with port at home is because it is more alcoholic, you serve it in smaller portions. Most people don't say, you know, I would have vintage port, but at home I would never drink. You know, there are only four of us. We're going to have four glasses. That's half a bottle of vintage port. And I'm not going to have it again for a week, and it'll go bad on me. So Madeira is really remarkable in that way.
And very resilient.
If there are four people, it must be a magnum, surely.
Not people like you and we, Bartholomew. Other people.
Actually, funnily, at dinner parties, people are always hesitant to open that bottle of port. But it's the port which really gets the conversation flowing, and it's quite hard not to finish a bottle. But
especially if I'm in the room.
Exactly. But just going back to keeping bottle open 2 weeks, table wine's obviously a couple of days is what you should be aiming for at most. But port, yes, vintage port, an old vintage port, a couple of weeks is about right. But don't forget there are tawny ports, which have been aged in a barrel exposed to oxygen. So those you can keep open for several months, no problem. But I agree, Madeira you can keep open literally for years and not. And two other things I'd like to say in favor of Madeira. One is it has a very beautiful, naturally high acidity, which makes it go with almost any dessert you want to put it with. It can be the most citric, fruity dessert, and it still goes well. And the other thing is, unlike other dessert wines, Madeira has a dry finish. It may be a sweet wine, but it has a dry finish. So when you put it against a sweet dessert, the sweetness of a dessert does not clash with the sweetness of wine because wine is already finishing dry. Whereas if you put a dessert with, say, a late harvest Riesling, it makes the wine taste dry and it ruins it.
Well, one of the things that I think is very interesting is we need to tell people out there that the words port and Madeira have not been sufficiently protected in the United States.
Very
and
important.
The real port and Madeira both come from Portugal. If it says port on the label and it doesn't say Portugal someplace else, you have a problem. It also might say Oporto, O-P-O-R-T-O. And for Madeira, likewise, if it doesn't say Portugal somewhere else on the label, then you don't have the real stuff. And the stuff that's out there really, I have to say, has nothing to do with the real port. So the New York State port is not really the same thing. The New York State Madeira is really not the same thing.
And frankly, even California ports, while I do find them interesting and some of them very enjoyable, they're not really the same thing as a Portuguese port. Yes, they are fortified wines, but generally they're made with different grapes, and they're different than Portuguese ports, and you need to take them as a separate category.
The other thing that I find very interesting, Bartholomew, is we're talking about the high-end ports. We're talking about ports to drink, and Madeira's to drink, and I do love Madeira, as I said. But inexpensive Madeira is a magical wine to cook with, and when you have a recipe that calls for Madeira, you really need to use Portuguese Madeira because, as you said earlier, Bartholomew, it is cooked and it is oxidized, and so it's the only wine that's completely stable in the pan. And so when you cook with red wine, the flavor of that red wine changes with the cooking of it. When you cook with Madeira, it tastes like Madeira, and it does not change in the pan. It's a very unique wine to cook with, and it works very well in a lot of recipes.
Actually, my very favorite recipe, I need to tell you, Bartholomew, is to make a Malmsey Zabayon.
Yum.
Really delicious. Actually, a Boual is usually that's a type of Madeira.
Again, it is important to emphasize it must be true Madeira from the island of Madeira, because the stuff you get in upstate New York or other parts of the country here are not made in the same way, and they don't have the intensity. So when you cook with it, you tend to reduce the wine and you lose the flavor, whereas using true Madeira, you maintain the flavor, and that is the point of using Madeira. That's why they use it in recipes, not just to give it a kick, but they want the actual flavor. It's part of a recipe.
We're going to put Mark's recipe for a Madeira Zabayon up on the website a little bit later, as well, Bartholomew, as a link to your site.
Great.
And so people can learn a lot more about Madeira. And we're going to have a few suggestions as to what you should eat with Madeira, where to find it, and how to drink it. And that'll all be up on the website later, and we'll talk more about it in just a moment.
Brilliant. But I go to a lot of lengths to select the finest ports I can find. And we do make our own. It's called Broadbent. But we also import Quinta de Crasto.
You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to talk to you for a few moments about how exactly you select those.
Sure.
The houses that you choose to represent and how you came to own your own port with your own name on it. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. Our guest is Bartholomew Broadbent. He's America's foremost authority on port and Madeira. He's the owner of Broadbent Selections, and he's been named by Decanter Magazine as one of the 50 most influential people in the wine world. And we'll be talking with him more in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we're talking with Bartholomew Broadbent, America's foremost authority on port and Madeira.
We were talking about, now you know a lot about this stuff from an academic perspective, but you also import this and bring it to the United States. And how do you choose which ports to bring in? What do you look for when you're looking to bring in the best ports you can bring in? And what ports do you bring in?
Yeah, you see, I started off 25 years ago in the port business, more going around the States educating people. And I started my own importing company 10 years ago when I realized there was a fantastic opportunity that was being missed. And that's the number one selling port in Portugal, which is called Ferreira. And Ferreira was not being imported or very badly represented America. It actually has always sold extremely well in New Jersey because of the fabulous Portuguese population in New Jersey.
Right, sure.
To them, it's the best port. So I approached Ferreira in Portugal, who are known for making the top tawny port, their Duke de Bragança, mm-hmm. and asked them if I could import their wine, and they said yes, and that gave me the impetus to start an importing company once I knew I had
once you actually had a client?
Yeah, an important important brand to base my company on. At about the same time, I had been planning to start my own port company, which is goes by Broadbent. So we do make our own port and Madeira. But then we also represent a smaller port producer called Quinta de Carrasco.
Mm-hmm. And, great port.
And they also make fabulous table wines.
Mm-hmm.
So Quinta de Carrasco I selected really because as a mini producer, they're, I think, the top quality small producer.
Why don't we just take 1 second and tell people what single vineyard Quintas are?
Yeah, single Quinta, until about a decade or so ago, anyone who was making port had to, by law, sell it to a shipper, a big house that ships wines.
And how many of those were there?
How many big shippers? Yeah. Maybe couple of dozen big shippers.
And there were like 30,000 growers or something, right?
Yeah. But the law changed when they joined the EEC or something like that, where they allowed small producers to ship their own wine and produce their own wine under their own label. And so a single Quinta port is usually a grower who has just one vineyard, mm-hmm. Doesn't sell it to the shippers anymore, decides that he'd like to develop his own brand.
Let me reframe this issue. The way things were, the deck was really stacked against the farmer until 1986 when Portugal joined the EU. Because if you wanted to grow, you grew grapes and you wanted to sell it to a port producer, you couldn't. You weren't allowed by mm-hmm. law to make your own grapes into port and sell it. You had to sell
to the
big port houses, and that doesn't really sound very fair to me. But when they joined the EU, they had to have some degree of economic fairness there. And so these 30,000 small farmers, they usually hold very small plots of land and can't do this, but they don't have to sell to those same people. It's not as much of a monopoly or an oligopoly anymore. And these small producers, which is what we're all about, can now sell single Quinta or single farm ports.
It's very comparable to the estate bottled wines that we sell here in the United States.
So was that a fair...
Yeah, I'm impressed by the fact that you actually know the dates and the years more than I know. Maybe you guys are the port experts of America.
Maybe. Of New Jersey, maybe. I don't know.
Jersey.
So since the single Quinta vintage ports, they've really taken off as a sector of the market, haven't they?
They have, but what's become more exciting are the table wines they're producing.
Yeah.
And there are two, apart from Quinta de Crasto, the other top table wine, the Chateau Lafite of Portugal, is called Barca Velha.
Uh-huh.
And that you can find that in New Jersey, but it's, $150 a bottle, something like that.
Well, what about the less expensive? I mean, I remember when I was would go to Portuguese restaurants a lot because I did grow up around Newark, New Jersey. We would drink the Dow, mm-hmm. And for $3 a bottle because well, that's what we had was $3, and I wanted a bottle of wine
because we had $3.20,
and that's what we had. So, do you see a lot of inexpensive, not port but regular table wines from Portugal now becoming available?
I mean, you can still get nice sort of Vinha Verdes. For under $10, and some other good wines under $10 from Portugal, but really it's worth spending about $7 or $8 more and getting Quinta de Crasto basic wine. But I like those old Douro wines. The old Portuguese style wines are made in a very old European way, and some people love them. I do personally love them, but a lot of people who are used to the upfront fruit New World style wines probably don't like them. But the small the wines which I've been mentioning are produced more in the New World way.
Well, and I think that the whole Portugal is really a place to watch because it was in 1986 when the laws changed, and the economics of Portugal and the Portuguese wine industry they're very much favor the large producer more than most places, and most places do. But you're starting to see these small producers and these small properties produce individual wines, and that's one of the very, very exciting things. And Bartholomew, we're going to put our link to you up on our website and some of the wines that you have suggested. And I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Great fun. Maybe about other wines next time.
That'd be great.
And when you come to New Jersey, you have to come visit us at Stage Left.
Will do. Thanks a lot.
And we'll share a glass of port and big New World Cabernet Sauvignon.
Brilliant.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today was Bartholomew Broadbent, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we had Bartholomew Broadbent, who was talking to us about port and Madeira.
Oh, he seems like a nice enough fellow.
He does indeed.
I tell you, when he talks about he talks about port being when he first came to the country, being consumed mostly by crusty old men in their leather armchairs. I was a crusty young man in my leather armchair. I was drinking port.
Now you're a crusty middle-aged man.
I was
man
an Irish kid
port.
With aspirations, is yeah. what I was. You know, but I had a girlfriend for a long time who we drank port together. And we loved port. She's in the wine business as well. And we both worked in the afternoons and evenings. We didn't work in the mornings. But our favorite thing to do, sometimes in the morning, when we go to work in the afternoon, especially if I had to work Sundays a lot, we'd get up in the morning. And we would make eggs, and we'd have a beautiful breakfast with eggs and coffee and all that stuff.
Brunch is like my favorite meal.
And we would have lovely coffee and read the paper, and then go to work at 2:00 in the afternoon. But you may not realize this, but port, vintage port, and eggs—not scrambled eggs, but like runny yolky eggs—remarkable, remarkable, remarkable. But it is the height of decadence to start off your day.
It sure is
with port and eggs, and we would always then have coffee and a small cigar.
You know,
just a small cigar.
There's actually another British tradition.
Why did I not marry her? What's wrong with me?
I let me count the ways. I'm okay. Sorry. There's also another British tradition, rather than port and eggs, is at the next morning after you finish a bottle of port at night, is to take the sediment, and port throws a lot of sediment, vintage port.
That's the gook on the bottom of the bottle.
That kind of purple gook on the bottom of the bottle.
Very bitter.
And what the British do on occasion is they take that sediment and they spread it on their toast in the morning. And I say, ew.
Now, we've heard that and we've read about that, but I've never met anyone who actually does it.
Oh, I tried it once.
But I tried it once.
Disgusting.
So you know what? I think that was just a practical joke played by the British.
The British don't really do that.
They put that in all the books so that the Americans do it.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, no, it's really bad. But we do like vintage port. We do like, and the Madeiras especially that he was talking about. There's a company, it's not his, so I had to wait until he got off the air to tell you, but it's called Blandy's, and they make really good Madeira that you can buy. Just they're straight low end Madeira. Now Madeira can cost
5 years. They have 5-year-old Madeiras,
which is amazing. And Madeira can cost hundreds of dollars a bottle, but their basic entry level Madeira is very good.
And 10-15 bucks, and again, you can keep it forever.
And it's great for cooking with as well. You've been listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time, 12 noon.